Today is Wednesday, September 9th, 2026, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. Argentina's Milei hails the Pinochet coup. A Government in Crisis Turns to Dictatorship and Nationalism, by Andrea Lobo. On September 3rd, Argentine President Javier Milei delivered two speeches. In the morning in Santiago, Chile, he told the fifth regional meeting of the Madrid Forum, an international assembly of fascist forces, that the 1973 military coup against Salvador Allende had opened four decades of prosperity. That night, flanked by his entire cabinet on national television, he announced sanctions, decrees, and a naval base in defense of Argentina's claim to the Malvinas Islands. The two speeches were deeply connected. A government whose austerity program is feeding economic crisis and mass discontent is reaching simultaneously for the rehabilitation of military dictatorship and for nationalist chauvinism. Both are directed against the working class, and both deepen Argentina's subordination to American imperialism. Another speech 2 years ago provides the key to understanding Milei's politics in class terms. In January 2024, at the World Economic Forum in Davos, he delivered a fascistic diatribe that was greeted with thunderous applause by the oligarchs. Elon Musk praised him. The Wall Street Journal ran his speech under the headline that he had given the Davos crowd, a spine transplant. Now, with the rise of the AfD in Germany and the far right globally, as well as Trump's ongoing efforts to undermine the constitutional order in the US, the normalization of such politics is well advanced. What Milei says today, he says as the voice of a financial oligarchy that has concluded it can no longer rule through democratic forms. The Santiago speech was filled with fascistic tropes, from describing parliamentary opposition in Argentina as a coup d'etat, to boasting of deporting more than 10,000 people last year and 14,000 so far this year, and making a nod to the Great Replacement Theory, claiming Spain's government was clearing the way for, quote, the foreign hordes that will end up replacing them, end quote. After the overthrow of the communist Allende, his most significant remarks, however, were from his tribute to 1973. Milei told the Madrid Forum, quote, Chile is an emblematic place because, with its recent history, it reminds us of the immense value of waging the cultural battle. After the overthrow of the communist Allende, Chile entered a period of stability and growth that extended for more than 40 years, and thanks to that, Chile was without any doubt the envy in economic terms of the entire region. End quote. What Milei describes as stability and growth was a reign of fascist terror. On September 11, 1973, the Chilean military, with the direct assistance of the CIA, U.S. military intelligence, and the Nixon administration, bombed the presidential palace and installed the dictatorship of General Augusto Pinochet. Some 3,000 workers, students, and socialists were murdered or disappeared. Tens of thousands were tortured in the National Stadium and in clandestine centers across the country. Congress was dissolved, parties banned, unions smashed. This apparatus of terror existed for a definite purpose: to impose, at gunpoint, the free market program drawn up by the Chicago Boys, trained under Milton Friedman. Privatization, deregulation, and the destruction of wages could be carried out only after the working class had been physically decapitated. That is the real content of the Chilean model Milei celebrated in Santiago, a week before the coup's anniversary, standing beside President José Antonio Kast, a lifelong defender of the dictatorship. Milei then turned to the 2019 mass uprising in Chile. Quote, the whole country was plunged into an unprecedented wave of left-wing violence, which left dozens dead between 2019 and 2020, because the leftists, at a certain point, believed they were right to use violence to carry out their policies. End quote. This is a brazen falsification. It was the Chilean state that killed dozens of protesters and shot more than 400 of them in the eyes, on top of the thousands detained and tortured. It is fitting that Milei combines the 2019 repression with his tribute to the coup. At the time, President Sebastián Piñera launched a state of emergency that put soldiers on the streets against demonstrators for the first time since Pinochet. The Malvinas Card. Hours later, Milei went on national television to claim his government would pursue control over the Malvinas. He claimed that winds of change favored Argentina's claim, citing Trump's remark that Washington might reconsider its position recognizing Britain's control of the islands, which it calls the Falklands. In fact, Trump's comment was rather noncommittal. Quote, "I always review every position. That's just one of many." Asked by GB News whether he would aid Britain in a dispute, Trump was dismissive, complaining that the UK weren't there to help me over Iran. The absurdity of Milei now wrapping himself in the flag is underscored by his long-standing self-description as an admirer of Margaret Thatcher, who ordered the sinking of the General Belgrano, killing 323 Argentine sailors. He adopted the sovereignty posture only months ago, amid rapidly falling approval ratings and coming elections. The historical precedent is unmistakable. In April 1982, the fascist military junta, economically bankrupt, facing a working class returning to struggle after brutal repression, invaded the islands. The Peronist and Stalinist leadership that had just been clubbed into submission marched to the Plaza de Mayo behind General Leopoldo Galtieri, and the revisionist Nahuel Moreno, who had broken with the International Committee of the Fourth International and was living in exile, called on his supporters to join the military camp of the junta, refusing to raise a single independent class demand. Hundreds of conscripts died for a regime that had disappeared 30,000 people, as a national cause became the instrument through which workers were bound to their own executioners. Once again, the entire Argentine political establishment is closing ranks behind the cause of the Malvinas. The Peronists, who denounce Milei's austerity by day, echo his territorial claims without qualification. So do the Morenoite organizations. The Trotskyist position is the opposite. Leon Trotsky's theory of permanent revolution establishes that in countries of belated capitalist development, oppressed by imperialism, the democratic task, the expulsion of foreign domination among them, cannot be entrusted to the national bourgeoisie. Only the working class, fighting for its own class power, can carry them through as part of the World Socialist Revolution. The British seizure of the islands in 1833 and the Royal Navy's War of 1982 were colonial crimes. But the struggle against imperialism can only be waged by a working class that maintains irreconcilable political independence from its own bourgeoisie. Milei's speeches are a measure of the crisis of his government. Milei's disapproval rating stands near 65%, while 64% now reject the claim that his economic shock therapy policies are necessary despite the pain, and 65% say the sacrifice will not prove worthwhile, figures that were evenly split at the start of the year. The wholesale dollar broke 1,500 pesos, despite heavy central bank intervention to prevent a devaluation of the peso, and the country risk index rose more than 20% in August. Tax revenue is falling as consumption-linked sectors contract, and in June, the government missed its IMF fiscal target for the first time. Some 30,000 small and medium enterprises have closed, and hundreds of thousands of jobs have been slashed. Last week, the government imposed a minimum wage of 383,800 pesos, below the official indigenous line and below what the employers themselves had offered. Meanwhile, the anti-corruption presidency is engulfed in scandal. The Libra cryptocurrency fraud, in which forensics reportedly show him speaking with a lobbyist 5 times in the minutes before the launch. The disability agency bribery case, in which 19 have been indicted. And a leaked audio alleged kickbacks of $500,000 to $800,000 monthly. The chief of staff's use of the presidential plane. A former official arrested with $2.5 million in cash, drugs, and spying equipment. His ex-campaign chief, Fernando Cerimedo, facing multiple charges in Bolivia. Amid these scandals, the Trump administration saw no fault in celebrating the Drug Enforcement Administration's World Summit in Buenos Aires, with DEA Chief Terry Cole praising Milei's policies against drug traffickers and against terrorists as a model for the region. What is meant by this is a subordination of security and foreign policy to U.S. imperialism and its war preparations against China. Confronted with 4 general strikes since taking office, Milei's government has answered opposition with the anti-picket protocol, mass arrest, and the gassing and clubbing of pensioners in front of Congress. Even the celebrations that followed Argentina's World Cup victories in July were met with rubber bullets, tear gas, and water cannon in Buenos Aires, Cordoba, and other cities. Under Milei, the wealthiest 1% of the population controls fully 1/4 of the nation's wealth, while the bottom 50%, suffering the full impact of his government's chainsaw austerity, is unable to afford basic necessities of life. It is within this fundamental social context that the Argentine president's celebration of the torture regimes of Pinochet and Videla must be understood. They are no political aberration or personal eccentricity, but a revealing expression of the drive by the bourgeoisie in Argentina, as throughout the capitalist world, to bring political forms of rule in line with underlying social relations. With the vast concentration of wealth at the top, even as wages, pensions, and public services are decimated, democratic forms of rule become increasingly unviable. The result is a turn to fascist methods everywhere. Trump's drive to consolidate a presidential dictatorship in the U.S., the rise of the Alternative for Germany, the AfD, the political heir of Nazism, and the coming to power of far-right governments from Argentina to Colombia. The same social contradictions driving the ruling class to resurrect the murderous methods of Pinochet are moving workers and youth into struggle across the Americas and internationally. What is required to defend basic democratic rights and defeat the drive to dictatorship is the independent industrial and political mobilization of the working class, armed with a socialist and internationalist program directed against dictatorship, war, and the capitalist system that gives rise to them both. France Unbowed Party calls for the freeing of Bogdan Cyrotiuk by Alex Lantier. Support has continued to grow internationally for Bogdan Cyrotiuk, the young Ukrainian socialist sentenced to 15 years in prison for opposing the NATO-Russia proxy war in Ukraine. On Monday, Jean-Luc Mélenchon's France Unbowed, LFI, party issued a communiqué condemning the fabricated charges and the unacceptable brutality of the sentence against Cyrotiuk and calling for his immediate release. On August 10th, a court in Pervomaïsk sentenced Cyrotiuk, a leader of the Young Guard of Bolshevik Leninists, the YGBL, on charges of high treason under martial law. Since then, the campaign waged by the sections of the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, to defend Bogdan has won increasing prominence and support. Over 7,700 people from 90 countries have signed the petition for Cyrotiuk on freebogdan.org, and letters of protest have flowed to the Pervomaïsk court from over 30 countries. A growing range of political parties across Europe have condemned the sentence and demanded Bogdan's freedom. These include the Stop the War Coalition in Britain, Revolutionary Left, and the Spanish Communist Workers' Party in Spain, Socialist Alternative in the Netherlands, and the Spartacist Workers' Party, and Klass gegen Klass in Germany. In France, Lutte Ouvrière the LO, or the workers' struggle, and Revolución Permanente, the RP, have issued statements calling to free Sirotuk. LFI's decision to issue their own call for Sirotuk's freedom reflects the growing prominence of the campaign to free Sirotuk and the political significance of Sirotuk's struggle to unite the working class against far-right forces and a bloody war that threatens to engulf all of Europe. Mélenchon is a frontrunner in next year's French presidential elections, which currently are expected to produce a runoff between Mélenchon and a neo-fascist candidate. In the 2022 elections, Mélenchon won 8 million votes. Many LFI officials, including LFI National Assembly Group leader Mathilde Panot, and LFI European Parliamentary members Rima Hassan and Emma Faro, have faced police interrogations or legal charges on trumped-up accusations of terrorism for statements of opposition to the Gaza genocide. Below is the full text of LFI's communique translated into English. Press communique, Ukraine, criticizing the war cannot be punishable by 15 years in prison. On August 10, 2026, a Ukrainian court condemned Bogdan Sirotuk, a 27-year-old socialist militant, to 15 years in prison for high treason and to the confiscation of his assets. This sentence is one of unacceptable brutality. The judgment gives no evidence of espionage, sabotage, or transmission of military intelligence to Russia. As proof of high treason, it cites the drafting, translation, and publication of 6 articles for the World Socialist website, a socialist publication established in the United States. In these texts, Bogdan Sirotuk criticizes the policy of the Ukrainian government and the role of NATO, denounces the rehabilitation of Nazi collaborationists like Stepan Bandera, and calls for the unity of Russian and Ukrainian workers against war. He also explicitly condemns the invasion of Ukraine by the regime of Vladimir Putin. These positions can be discussed or combated politically. They cannot be punished by 15 years of prison and assimilated to treason against the state. The ruling also orders the destruction of the program of his organization, of brochures, and printed articles seized during searches. To political condemnation, there is thus added a particularly worrying act of state censorship. France Unbowed condemns, without reservation, the Russian invasion, defends the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine, as well as the Ukrainian people's right to peace. But war cannot serve as a pretext for the annihilation of political pluralism. It does not authorize a government to turn all political opposition into a crime against the state. France Unbowed asks for the cancellation of this ruling and the immediate liberation of Bogdan Sirotuk. It calls on the French government and the European Union to end their silence and to ask for effective guarantees for appeal procedures and to ensure the respect for free expression guaranteed by the European Convention for Human Rights. Solidarity with a people subjected to aggression does not impose alignment with its government. To remain silent before such disproportionate political verdict would betray the democratic principles that Europe claims to defend. End quote. The campaign in defense of Bogdan Sirotuk is at the center of growing opposition of workers, youth, and progressive sections of the middle classes to war, militarism, and the promotion of fascist political forces. The World Socialist website and the Parti de l'Égalité Socialiste of France urge their readers and supporters to visit the website of the campaign to free Bogdan Sirotuk, freebogdan.org. That's freebogdan.org. There they can sign the petition for his freedom. Through freebogdan.org, readers can access Ukrainian translation tools to contact the Pervomaysk City District Court at inbox@pm.mk.court.gov.ua and the Nikolaev Court of Appeal at inbox@mka.court.gov.ua with a copy to freebogdan@wsws.org. to demand the sentence be overturned and that Bogdan be freed. Black lung cases surged to highest level since 1978 among U.S. coal miners, by Milo Stevens. A new study by the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, or NIOSH, has confirmed what miners, their widows, and black lung clinic physicians have warned for years. The deadly and preventable disease has returned to levels not seen in nearly half a century. Published in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine, NIOSH researchers found 32.5% of sampled veteran underground coal miners in central Appalachia, those with at least 25 years underground, suffer from the disease. The last time prevalence among miners with the same work history reached such a level was in 1978. In 2018, the rate was 20.6%. The new findings represent more than a fourfold increase since the disease hit a low point of 7% in 1999. 3 decades after the Coal Mine Health and Safety Act of 1969 established federal dust limits and black lung benefits. The resurgence has been driven by miners' increasing exposure to respirable crystalline silica, as the thick, easily mined seams of Appalachia were exhausted. Operators turned to thinner remaining seams, forcing miners to cut through far more rock rich in quartz. Silica dust can cause especially severe forms of black lung and is roughly 20 times more toxic than coal dust alone. Tim Balthus, a 57-year-old miner and mine foreman, described working in a silica-laden air to NPR reporters, quote, "It's like opening your front door and letting the sunshine in, with dust particles floating in the light, and then multiplying that by 10 billion times. It's like a fog." Stone Mountain Health Services in southwestern Virginia alone has diagnosed 2,400 new cases in the past 5 years. A 2019 NPR Frontline investigation documented 21,000 instances of silica dust overexposure over 30 years. Last week, the Black Lung Association of Southeastern Kentucky wrote to Representative Hal Rogers, urging him to co-sponsor the Support Our Miners Act. The Kentucky Republican responded by defending the industry's record and blaming the crisis in the Federal Black Lung Disability Trust Fund on environmental regulation. Quote, "We all agree that the Black Lung Disability Trust Fund needs significant reform to ensure that our coal miners get their hard-earned benefits before this painful disease robs them from seeing a dime," Rogers offers, told LEX 18 News. Rogers boasted of an $18 million increase in the fund, then blamed Democrats for regulating coal mines out of business in a targeted war on coal, leaving only 3,600 coal miners in Kentucky today, and sticking taxpayers with the bill, end quote. Rogers' account leaves out the role of coal operators in shifting black lung liabilities onto the federal fund. The fund, financed primarily by an excise tax on coal, pays benefits when no responsible operator can be identified or when the liable operator does not pay. Bankruptcies of just 3 self-insured coal companies, Alpha Natural Resources, James River Coal, and Patriot Coal, transferred an estimated $865 million in benefit liabilities to the fund. The fund has borrowed from the Treasury almost every year since 1979 to meet its obligations. NIOSH first recommended an exposure limit of 50 micrograms of respirable crystalline silica per cubic meter of air in 1974, and reiterated the standard for coal miners in 1995. The Obama administration's dust rule, fully implemented in 2016, lowered the overall respirable coal mine dust limit from 2.0 to 1.5 milligrams per cubic meter, but left the silica standard essentially unchanged. It was not until 2024 that the Biden administration adopted the 50 microgram silica limit NIOSH had recommended half a century earlier. Mining industry groups challenged the rule days before coal operators were due to comply in April 2025, the Trump administration's Mine Safety and Health Administration announced a temporary enforcement pause, and the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals then stayed the rule's compliance deadlines. The judicial stay remains in effect, and MSHA is reconsidering portions of the rule. On February 18, 1969, West Virginia rank-and-file miners launched a 23-day wildcat strike, forcing the state to recognize black lung as a compensable occupational disease, and helping drive passage of the Federal Coal Mine Health and Safety Act later that year. The National Mining Association now argues that because black lung takes years to develop, current cases do not reflect the conditions, practices, protections, or regulations that are in place today. End quote. At the same time, the industry has pressed for greater use of administrative controls and personal protective equipment, including respirators, when engineering controls do not keep silica exposure below federal limits. Federal mine law requires operators to control mine air rather than substitute respirators for environmental controls. Respirators can supplement those measures, but they place part of the burden of protection on individual miners and can impede communication in dangerous, noisy conditions. Ventilation, water sprays, and other engineering controls attack the hazard at its source. The gain miners wrested from the coal operators and the government through mass industrial struggle have been steadily undermined as the UMWA bureaucracy integrated itself with the companies and the state and worked to contain the class struggle that had historically built the union. Beginning under President Richard Trumka, who first took office in 1982, the UMWA abandoned the tradition of industry-wide action in favor of selective strikes, isolating workers at individual companies while production continued elsewhere. The consequences were demonstrated in the 1984-85 strike against A.T. Massey, which ended with hundreds of miners fired or blacklisted and helped accelerate the spread of non-union coal in southern West Virginia. In Pittston, in 1989-90, rank-and-file miners repeatedly broke through the union's selective strike strategy, launching sympathy strikes, and spread across the coal fields and, at their height, involved tens of thousands of miners in 11 states. John McCoy, a 42-year-old UMWA member, was killed on a West Virginia picket line during the struggle. The same course continued after Trumka left the UMWA. Under Cecil Roberts, the union accepted repeated concessions on wages, benefits, hours, and working conditions as union organization collapsed across the coal fields. At Warrior Met in Alabama, miners struck for nearly 2 years, beginning in 2021, to recover concessions the UMWA had accepted after the bankruptcy of Walter Energy. After workers rejected an initial union-backed agreement by 1,006 votes to 45, the UMWA kept the struggle isolated and ultimately ordered miners back to work in 2023 without a contract. More than 1,700 coal miners died from black lung between 2020 and 2023. Ending a disease caused by preventable exposure requires placing miners' health and lives above the profitability of the coal industry. That requires workers' controls over the mines as part of the socialist reorganization of production on the basis of social need rather than private profit. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. we urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.